islands of the Pacific were settled by navigators who steered by the stars across dark seas that must have seemed as vast as deep space. The circumnavigation of the globe by Magellan's ship Vittoria in the 16th century proved that the Earth is a sphere, unbounded but finite, capable of being mapped and fully explored. Scientific expeditions like the voyage of Captain James Cook to the South Pacific in 1769 had three missions: to map the Earth, to document the exotic life forms they found, and to help chart the realm of the other planets. In Tahiti, Cook and his crew observed a rare transit of Venus across the sun from a mountaintop site known ever since as Point Venus. They were taking part in an effort to measure the size of the solar system. By timing the moment when Venus first impinged on the solar disk, as seen from Tahiti and from another location thousands of miles away, the distance from the Earth to the sun could be measured through triangulation. The relative sizes of all the visible planets' orbits were already known, so once the size of Earth's orbit was established, that of the others would follow. The exploration of space had begun, with planet Earth its first destination. Wrote the artist Sidney Parkinson, who accompanied Cook and painted some of the exotic life forms they encountered in the South Pacific, "How amazingly diversified are the works of the deity within the narrow limits of this globe we inhabit." As specimens were brought back to museums and scientific societies in Paris and London, it became clear that these newly discovered species of plants and animals were, for all their diversity, related, that they shared a common origin. But if the species are all related, how did they get to be so different? The brig HMS Beagle was a 19th-century spaceship dispatched on a round-the-world mission to investigate life on Earth. The naturalist aboard the Beagle, Charles Darwin, was young and inexperienced, fresh out of college, but he loved collecting plants and animals, and in studying them he became the first to realize how evolution works, by combining the creativity of random mutation with the editing power of natural selection to turn one species into many. Ever since Darwin, evolution has been the pole star of the biological sciences. Darwin's theory revealed that living things and the planets they live on all function under the same set of physical laws. As Darwin wrote, "There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers, having been originally breathed by the Creator into a few forms or into one, and that whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved." We don't know whether life on other planets would be based on DNA or some different molecule, but we do think it would evolve along Darwinian lines. The DNA molecule, the blueprint for life on Earth, contains a chemical code based on four polynucleotides that harbors all the genetic information necessary to reproduce the organism to which it belongs. That's a lot of information. A single sunflower seed has the data storage capacity of 100,000 books. It may seem amazing that all the millions of species of life could be encoded using just four chemical symbols, but actually four is more than enough. Life could have gotten by with as few as two. This audiobook was digitally recorded using a code consisting of nothing but zeros and ones. We don't know whether extraterrestrial life forms would be based on DNA or some other molecular blueprint, but it's widely presumed that Darwinian selection is the way life works, not just here on Earth, but everywhere else that there is life. Critics of Darwin's theory say it's impossible to imagine creating birds or butterflies by randomly organizing four symbols, just as it's impossible to imagine that randomly organizing the letters of the alphabet could produce King Lear. And they're right so far as that argument goes, but it doesn't go very far. Evolution isn't just random chance. It's also a matter of discarding the variations that don't work and keeping the ones that do. The variations that have survived are the ones that have promoted survival, so DNA forms a kind of history library, a record of perseverance on a changing planet. By exploring the lands and seas, studying creatures alive today and the fossil records of those that lived in the past, scientists began to piece together the story of how life evolved. Theirs was a great contribution to human knowledge, But exploration is a two-way street, and what Europeans regarded as the discovery of new lands often seemed to those who already lived there like an assault from another planet. As Captain Cook put it, how can these people see us as anything other than invaders of their territory? Asked Pedro Pizin of the Doi people, Papua New Guinea, "The white man came from there. We'd never seen such a thing. How did he come from the ground? How did he come from the sky, the water? We were confused. We thought that these white men were lifted from the sky." The English author H.G. Wells noted that the so-called discovery of Tasmania by the Europeans was a very frightful disaster for the Tasmanians themselves. How would we feel, he wondered, if technologically advanced creatures from another planet colonized Earth? Wells's musings about the dark underbelly of colonialism resulted in the first modern science fiction novel, War of the Worlds. When Orson Welles broadcast a radio dramatization of H.G. Wells's novel, panic broke out among those listeners who took seriously the notion that the Earth was being invaded by an armada of hostile Martians. Soon the movie theaters and airwaves were alive with tales of death from above. In the public imagination, space had ceased to be cold and empty. It was a jungle out there. When humans actually ventured into space, the search for life was seldom very far from their minds. But where was life to be found? Our nearest neighbor, the airless moon, showed no signs of indigenous life, and rocks returned to Earth by the Apollo astronauts were sterile. Yet bacteria that were accidentally transported to the moon aboard an unmanned lunar lander evidently survived there for years. And so strong was the association of exploration with the search for life that when the Apollo astronauts returned to Earth, they were placed in quarantine just to be sure they hadn't picked up any moon germs. The Habitable Zone. More promising as abodes for life were the Earth's two neighboring planets, Venus and Mars. They orbit within what was called the Habitable Zone, close enough to the Sun for solar energy to drive the chemistry of life, but not so close as to boil off water or break down the organic molecules on which life depends. And it was thought they might have hot, molten cores that could power volcanoes like the ones that help sustain life here on Earth. Venus was a favorite of science fiction writers who imagined it to be a lush, tropical planet, a kind of celestial Tahiti. Perpetually shrouded in clouds, Venus was a mystery. Nobody knew what might be down there. The real Venus proved to be stranger than fiction. A series of unmanned Venera probes, dispatched by the Russians from 1966 to 1982, descended through the dense clouds and landed on the surface of Venus. They found not a lush jungle, but a dry, hellish world almost devoid of oxygen and hot enough to melt lead. Although the Venera probes were built sturdy as diving bells, each could take photos and obtain data for only about an hour before being destroyed by the heat and pressure. Scientists now theorize that Venus fell victim to a runaway greenhouse effect, excess carbon dioxide trapping solar heat under the blanket of its atmosphere. Many questions remain to be answered about Venus. Was its climate once more temperate than it is today, and if so, what went wrong? Was there ever life there in the past? David Grinspoon is a rock musician and an astronomer who works in comparative planetology, using what has been learned about other planets to enhance our understanding of Earth. As Grinspoon told us,
"The surface of Venus remained frustratingly hidden from us for hundreds of years. In the early 1990s, the Magellan spacecraft, an American spacecraft equipped with imaging radar, orbited and imaged the entire planet in stunning detail. All of a sudden, we went from almost no images of the surface of Venus, except for a few of those tantalizing Russian lander images, to a global view in very high resolution of the entire planet. Early telescopic observers of Venus correctly deduced that the fuzzy appearance of Venus in telescopic images is due to the fact that it's completely shrouded in clouds. Pretty recently, we started to get modern scientific data about the planet, which reveal the clouds to be made not of water, but of concentrated sulfuric acid, better known as battery acid. Venus is alive with volcanism. Other than the Earth. It's the most volcanically active planet in the inner solar system, and the range of styles of volcanism we see there is stunning. For instance, these pancake domes are made out of a very sticky kind of lava. That tells us that these are not made out of basalt. Basalt is very runny. This stuff, it's some kind of lava that's probably more rich in silica and less rich in iron and magnesium, and therefore doesn't flow as easily. One of the most surprising and controversial findings that we got from Magellan is that something radical changed relatively recently. About 500 million years ago, Venus essentially turned itself inside out with dramatic volcanic floods that covered up most of the previous surface features on the planet and probably flooded the air with greenhouse gases, causing rapid change to the climate as well as to the surface. This has perhaps disturbing implications because it tells us that Earth-like planets can undergo dramatic changes in both their surfaces and their climates in a relatively recent geologic epoch. And this information could mean that the Earth may have future threatening changes of this magnitude in store for us.
Mars was the planet thought most likely to harbor life. It lies within the habitable zone, and its polar cap suggested even to early observers that there could be water there. The amateur astronomer Percival Lowell of the Boston Lowells thought he saw canals on Mars. He built an observatory to study them and speculated that they had been constructed by a parched Martian civilization to ferry scarce water from the polar ice caps to their thirsty cities. But the canals turned out to be an optical illusion produced by the brain's tendency to connect dots to form lines. The actual search for life on Mars would require taking a closer look. A pair of instrumented Viking space probes were sent to Mars looking for signs of life. Each dispatched a lander to the surface, and in the pre-dawn hours of July 20, 1976, at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California, scientists and spectators waited anxiously for humankind's first close-up look at the surface of Mars. What the pictures revealed was neither any obvious sign of life nor a landscape as desolate as that of Venus, but a different sort of world with a character and history all its own. The landers dug up Martian soil and tested it for signs of biological activity. The tests found some unexpected chemical reactions, but no clear evidence of life. Meanwhile, a pair of Viking orbiters took images that showed dry riverbeds, indicating that Mars once had liquid water on its surface and, therefore, had a denser atmosphere, perhaps one sufficient to support life. Viking confirmed that Mars, like Venus and Earth, has volcanoes. The largest, Olympus Mons, is the biggest volcano in the solar system, but the very fact that Olympus Mons is so big suggests that Mars is geologically dead. Earth's molten core drives plate tectonics. The plates that support continents and the ocean floor slowly drift, gigantic barges afloat on liquid stone. The volcanoes of Hawaii were built one after another from a single hotspot below. The motion of the surface plates carried each volcano away, rendering it extinct